The next case is 071039, State of Ohio versus Michael Davis. Mr. Archer.
Mr. Chief Justice, Honorable Justices of the Supreme Court, Mr. Kelly, my name is William Archer. I'm an assistant prosecutor from Highland County, Ohio, here representing the state of Ohio. I also do have with me my children, William and Lauren, who are observing today's argument. This is a very narrow question presented to the court, and I will tell you that I expect that this is not a very popular argument that I'm about to present, and I have advised my colleagues of that. But again, because the court has not actually spoken on this point, it was something we felt that we needed clarification, and certainly we appreciate the court having accepted to review the case. The defendant, Michael Davis, was indicted on a multi-count, multi-defendant indictment, and the case proceeded to trial. During the course of the trial, the defendant's specific count involving aggravated trafficking in drugs, which involved OxyContin, was the state moved to amend that indictment because the actual weight of the drug had changed, and the amount changed the level of penalty upon a conviction from an F4 to an F2. The trial judge granted that amendment without objection, and the jury ultimately found the defendant guilty of the amended count and also of another count, count 33 of the indictment, which was deception to obtain a dangerous drug, the drug being Percocet, and that was a felony of the fifth degree.
Counsel, when you filed the motion to amend, I assume that was with notice to the defendant's counsel?
First, Your Honor, I did not handle the trial. My understanding is, Your Honor, that it was done orally at trial.
At trial?
At trial, that is my understanding.
And there was no objection, I believe.
There was no objection, Your Honor.
May I just follow up, Mr. Archer, for clarification purposes? The original indictment charged 7.2 grams, if I'm correct, in violation of the statute.
That's correct.
It was originally stated in the original indictment that it was, I believe, less than the bulk. Am I correct?
Yes.
And it was the only amendment was not to the 7.2 grams, but rather to the definition of what constituted the bulk amount for OxyContin. And it was changed to greater than five times the bulk. Am I right or wrong about that?
Your Honor, I believe that is correct. That, in essence,
now the question then that I have is, how much, what was the weight of the drug that was presented at trial? Was it still 7.2 grams, or was there an excess quantity?
Your Honor, I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know how much was actually presented.
Okay. What is the bulk amount of OxyContin?
Your Honor, without pulling my notes out, I can't answer that question specifically either.
Well, is it fair to say then that the amendment in this case was an amendment to better define what the bulk amount of OxyContin was? Or was it an amendment to change the quantity of drugs that was submitted for evidence at trial?
I think
two different questions.
I think, Your Honor, I think the better define the bulk amount, I think is what transpired in the trial. I think that is correct.
So the statute defines controlled substances, and it clarifies what the bulk amount is for every drug. And the only change in this indictment was, if I understand your argument, to change the bulk amount of OxyContin because 7.2 grams is in excess of five times the bulk amount?
Yes, Your Honor.
So there wasn't any evidentiary change at trial? There wasn't any statutory change at trial? And the identity of the crime did not change?
That is correct, Your Honor. That is correct. Throughout the case, it was an aggravated trafficking in OxyContin. It always was that charge, was always what the defendant was defending against and what was being prosecuted. That is correct.
And all along, everyone knew that it was 7.2 grams of OxyContin. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Although, counsel, if the amendment goes from bulk greater than bulk to greater than five times bulk, doesn't the penalty change?
Yes, it does, Your Honor.
So actually, the indictment, if one read the indictment as it was stated and looked up the penalty for greater than bulk, it would have been a lesser penalty than looking up the penalty for five times greater than bulk.
That's correct.
So someone looking at the indictment alone would have been lulled into thinking that a penalty was lesser than it would have been after the amendment.
That is correct, although, Your Honor, that the amount is not an essential element in the indictment. So that part, I don't think a person would have been lulled into that.
But the purpose of an indictment is to let the defendant know what risk is faced. And if the indictment is incorrectly saying that 7.2 grams is greater than bulk with a specific penalty, and what you're telling us now after the indictment, or after the amendment, it's still 7.2 grams, but the penalty is more severe. The individual does not, then, by virtue of the indictment itself, have the correct information.
The defendant, Justice Lansinger, the defendant would be on notice of the amount, and the counsel would be able to make that determination on what the penalties would be. I don't think there's a when the rule talks about misled or prejudiced, when that is indicated, I don't see how that's misled. Defense counsel has the same ability to review the statute and make that determination as the state does as well. So I can't tell you that this was done correctly, and I understand why we're here.
Well, counsel, the penalty is not an element for the prosecution to present at trial, correct?
Justice,
and it's not something that needs to be defended against. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And so the elements of knowingly and trafficking and the definition of that and the drug amount, and that was always remained the same.
That is correct, Your Honor. That is correct.
So how is, well, I'll maybe save this for the appellee to determine the degree of detriment to the defense.
Thank you.
Mr. Archer, let me ask you to address the fact that, as in response to Justice Pfeiffer's question, I think you said that there was no objection to this at trial.
That is correct.
Defendant. If there was no objection, is that a waiver in your view?
Your Honor, the Fourth District looked at it under plain error. And
how could this be plain error?
Well, Your Honor, we don't believe it is. And the reason that it's not is there's no miscarriage of justice here. When you look at the Allen case and the factors that this court set out there, in particular, element three requires a miscarriage of justice. And let me just, our argument would be, and I think judges generally are very practical in how they approach things, and while I'm not—
I know the seven of us are very practical.
What I think the trial judge did ultimately in sentencing is he realized that the amendment had dramatically changed the potential penalty. If you look at what the defendant was actually sentenced to, it was the mandatory 2 years on the F2 and then 1 year on the F5 to run concurrent. Accepting the argument that this should have been an F4, that still subjected the defendant to a penalty of 18 months and then a year. So the maximum could have been 2.5 years without the amendment. So again, I'm not sure where there's an argument of miscarriage of justice, unless the trial court had said, well, we're going to hammer you on that and we're going to give you 4 years on that count. So I would argue that there is no plain error here, and that there was a waiver because there was no objection to that.
Let's take the waiver out of it for a moment. And as you know, the appellee cites both Allen and Headley, in which this court said where the sentence changes, the identity of the crime charge and the indictment changes, and we held that was reversible error. How do you distinguish Headley and Allen?
Well, first, Allen, as I recall, Mr. Chief Justice, I don't think involved an amendment. So we're not talking about amending an indictment as we are here. In Headley, what the court was reviewing was an essential element, and the the court didn't actually get to the issue of the sentence because that didn't change. And so, as I argued in the brief, with all due respect, I think that's dicta on that. And in several of the cases, this court's mentioned the nature of the charge. Nature is not in Rule 7D, and so it's actually in Rule 7B. And so I think while the court is always trying to look at the fairness and the equity in these issues, the nature isn't part of Rule 7B. So you're really just looking at the name and the identity, and clearly the name didn't change. So then we're talking solely about the identity of the crime charged. And as the state continues to argue, it's always been the same charge. The defendant was always aware that this was a charge of aggravated trafficking in OxyContin. Not only that, and it's so obvious to not have to say, the defendant knew how much contraband he had. You know, we always act like this is some big surprise to the defendant. He knew how much he had. So it's really hard to understand how the defendant was misled in some way when the charge did not change. You read the rule, what our argument is the literal interpretation. Again, the court in statutory construction looks at common usage, ordinary terms, and identity is a state or fact of being the same one as described. While Rule 70 is not a statute, we would ask the court to continue to apply the same construction rules and just follow the basic definition of identity. And the identity is one and the same. And again, we are talking about the same charge. There are the courts that looked at this over, I think, a dozen times in the last 25 years, and the cases have evolved over time, starting with Headley, where the court said an essential element had to be in the indictment and could not be amended, to then eventually to O'Brien, which said you could amend, include an essential element, and then do the two-part test, again, whether the name and identity has changed, and then whether the defendant has been misled or prejudiced. And again, applying that test, cases like Campbell, which changed the section in the DUI statute where it's a different set of facts that were proven at trial, the court allowed that amendment to take place, and changing statute sections, and Brooks and Dilley involved death spec changes. I mean, the court's aware of that facts change in the course of a trial, and that there has to be some ability for the state to make changes as those facts change. And again, as long as the defendant has noticed that there is the same charge, then we would argue, Your Honors, that the name and identity of the crime has remained the same, and that the conviction should have been upheld by the Fourth District. I would like to reserve whatever time I have left, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Archer. Mr. Kelly.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, my name is Tim Kelly. I'm here on behalf of the defendant, Mr. Davis. Your Honors, we believe that the Court of Appeals correctly decided this case, and that we request that the court deny the state's appeal and send this back to Highland County to follow through with the Fourth District.
Counsel, factually, do you agree that to get the answer that the Court of Appeals achieved, you have to do a plain error analysis.
Plain error, yes, Your Honor. Yes. And we believe that plain error did occur in this case. We believe that the amendment herein from an F4 to an F2 in the middle of a trial was plain error. I think the original indictment there was talk about the there was no change. The original indictment said in an amount less than bulk, and the amended indictment said in an amount at least 5 times but less than 50 times bulk. That's a specific change.
Counsel, with respect to the outcome for your client,
yes.
Do you agree that the sentence is in fact not much different than the judge could have given him for the lower level?
No, Your Honor, I don't agree with that.
Felony.
And
even if it were, it doesn't, that really wouldn't impact the rule that would be involved in the determination.
No,
of
I agree,
case.
Because there are cases where there have been amendments to lesser offenses, and that they've still been reversible because of the fact that it might have changed the identity of the offense. But in this case specifically, I think that the why I disagree with that contention is that as an F4, the maximum he could have gotten was 18 months, and but conceivably he could have received community control. And as far as a fine goes, there was no mandatory fine in the F4, and with the F2 there was a mandatory minimum fine of $7,500. So I'd say that you can look at all kinds of possible, you know, computations of, well, maybe they overlap and maybe he really didn't suffer. But who knows what could have happened. As an F4, I think he had a reasonable expectation of a community control. In this case, he was originally charged with, there were 7 offenses. I think 6 of them were felonies. Maybe all 7 were, but at least 6 were felonies. One of them was an F1. And in the course of the trial, for whatever reason, I'm not sure why, the defense counsel did not object. However, if you look at the entry amending the change, he does indicate underneath his signature "have seen." He doesn't indicate that he agrees with it. He indicates that he has seen it, and in a sense, I'm assuming that he didn't agree with it, but he did not preserve that disagreement on the record, which I believe he should have, and which I believe adds into the plain error argument.
What is the bulk amount for OxyContin, Mr.
You know, Your Honor, I do not know that.
Okay.
And I do not know if the amount charged originally is, you know, the bulk amount.
They prescribe OxyContin in milligrams, don't they? We're talking about 7.2 grams here.
And I just don't know the answer to that question. I don't know if the amount originally alleged and the amount on the amended indictment was a different amount or, you know, so.
Have you checked the record to see if it was 7.2 grams offered in evidence by the state in this case?
I don't know the answer to that. All I know is that on the amended indictment, it was changed from
The amendment that we're talking about is the original indictment was less than the bulk amount.
That's correct.
And the amendment at trial was?
5 times.
At least 5 times, but not less than, more than 50 times the bulk amount.
Right, which to me indicates a completely different amount of the substance.
Mr. Kelly,
The fact is, if 7.2 grams is not less than bulk, there was absolutely no change in the evidentiary presentation. You'd agree with that?
I would agree that if 7.2 is actually the more than 5 and less than 50, then they were just correcting or...
Someone made a mistake when they typed the original indictment and made it less than bulk, and they corrected it to the correct amount of what 7.2 grams was for OxyContin.
That's a possibility. However, they had a year between indictment and trial to discover that mistake, if that's what it was. But I don't even know if that's what it was. To consider that as a possibility, there was a full year in which to discover that, rather than in the middle of a long, complicated, multi-defendant, multi-charge trial involving 7 total charges against Mr. Davis, to do it at that point, I think is, you know, it should have been done sooner. It wasn't done properly. It's a constitutional violation. It's a violation of Criminal Rule 7B. And therefore, I just think that regardless of whether the 7.2 is, in fact, less than more than 5 and less than 50, it was still improper.
Mr. Kelly, did the indictment say that it was a felony of the fourth degree?
The original indictment said it was a felony of the fourth degree.
So as far as the amendment went from fourth degree felony to second degree felony.
Yes, the amendment specifically said it was a felony of the second degree.
Okay, so I mean, even though we talk about the 7.2 not
yes.
changing with respect to notice, defendant is originally given notice that it's a felony of the fourth degree.
Correct.
And then the amendment is to the felony of the second degree.
Yes.
Okay.
And another, you know, again, in the year preceding the trial, there's always pretrials and there's plea negotiations, and the defense counsel and the defendant have to look at, well, what are my possible penalties? And that all goes into making a decision whether or not to settle a case or proceed to trial. And
so, counsel, did defense counsel in this case know that an error had been made, that this was really not an F4, it should have been an F2? Prior to the prosecutor bringing that to the attention of the court?
I don't know what the defense counsel knew. I haven't discussed this with him. And I don't know the answer to that question. However, I do not think that this was...
Is there any responsibility on the defense counsel's part here to make sure that the indictment is correct?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure that the indictment was incorrect. And second of all, I think that it is... the charges are brought by the prosecution, by the prosecutor. I think it is primarily their obligation to make sure that they do it correctly and properly. I'm not saying that that relieves the defense from having to make sure things are done properly, but I don't think that this was a situation that might be considered an invited error on the part of the defendant. Again, this change, at the time this change in the indictment took place, it was in the middle of a trial. There were seven charges. The F4, the most serious charge was an F1, and I don't think that the defense counsel intentionally allowed this to happen, thinking, yes, I'm going to preserve here an issue on appeal.
Okay, let me ask you the apparently the distinction in Headley was that Headley didn't identify the drug that
Correct.
Was the subject of the criminal activity.
Yes.
And then went back and identified it as, putting in the words, to wit, cocaine.
Yes.
All right. Now, do you see a distinction between the failure to identify the controlled substance that you're alleged to have been illegally involved with and this case? Is there a distinction?
Well, I guess there's
there?
A distinction, but I think it's the classical distinction without a difference. I think Headley, this case follows the same principle as Headley, that it was just an impermissible amendment because it changed the identity by changing the amount. I would argue that that is clearly a change in the identity.
But it changed in Headley, it would have changed what the defendant had to defend against.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the possession of cocaine as opposed to a lesser drug, for example.
Yes.
And here, the defendant still had the same elements to require the state prove beyond a reasonable doubt and the defense defend against if there was a defense to be presented. Is that a correct statement?
Well, the same substance, but the amendment that was indicted did modify the amount, I don't know in the number of grams, but in the relative to the bulk amount, and I'd say that
it I guess there's the 7.2 was always a known quantity in the first indictment and in the amended indictment. Is that correct?
That I'm not positive of. I've got the amended indictment right here. No, it doesn't say the amount of grams. It just says that did knowingly sell or offer to sell OxyContin in an amount greater than 5 times the bulk amount and less than 50 times the bulk amount. And I don't see any reference to grams.
Okay, so that's different from what I've understood up to this point, that there was a 7.2 was present and everyone was on notice. They're just talking about the description, the statutory language of the description.
I'm looking at the indictment, and I think you're referring to the exchange where they were. It was being proposed, well, if 7.2 hasn't changed. But I think that's just a supposition. I don't think we know that that's the case. And I think in the amended indictment, it makes no reference to 7.2 grams, just says the amount of 5 times, more than 5 times, less than 50 times. How that relates, I have to plead ignorance, how that relates to 7.2 grams, I do not know.
Isn't your point that it changes the identity of the crime?
Yes.
That's your point, I think.
Yeah, yes, it is.
And that's what Headley said. If you change the identity of the crime,
yes,
it starts out being 7.2 grams, and it turns into, with the amendment, turns into an amount greater than 5 times the bulk amount, but less than 50 times the bulk amount. That's a different crime in terms of that the sentencing is different.
I agree with that.
That's what Headley speaks to. If the sentencing, if the change affects the identity of the crime and the sentencing, that's not permissible.
I agree with that.
I think that's your argument, isn't it?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. I hope I've been making that clear. My argument. And
I got that from your brief.
So. Yes, thank you.
Counsel, I'd like to follow up on that if I could. And I'm looking at the structure of the statute in this case with reference to the question about what the identity of the crime is. And this statute appears to be structured a little different than maybe some of the others. Because it starts out, no person shall knowingly do any of the following. One, sell or offer to sell a controlled substance. But then it goes to Division C, and it says, whoever violates Division A is guilty of one of the following. And then it has one and some subdivisions or subsections and a two. And one is a Schedule I or Schedule II drug. Accepting marijuana, cocaine, LSD, heroin, and hashish. And two is Schedule 3, 4, or 5. And then under each of these numbers, the little subsections, it says the penalty for the offense shall be determined as follows. So in terms of the identity of the crime, as I understand, you're still in subsection C1, Schedule 1 or 2 drug, is that correct? It didn't change from Schedule 1 or 2 to Schedule 3 or 4 or 5, did it?
No, I guess it would be the same schedule.
All right, so we're really talking essentially about the penalty then under the structure of this statute. And your argument is if it has a different penalty, then that changes the identity of the drug.
A different penalty and a different amount.
For the offense.
Yeah.
Even though in the structure of this statute, it appears the identity is C1 and the other identity is C2.
Yes.
You're then sort of extrapolating off of that each of these subsections would make a different identity as well.
And I think that makes sense because in this particular statute, you can have an F1 or an F5. And if to claim that, if you were to amend an F5 in trial to an F1 for some reason because a mistake was made, I think that's taking the most extreme possible circumstance. That just on the face of that doesn't seem fair, and that seems like it would clearly change the identity of the offense, defining identity as including severity of the penalties that are involved. This was a 4 to a 2. I think that it subjected the defendant to extremely more severe consequences.
What would be the trial strategy if this occurred at trial? You're defending against the same drug, it's just the question of amount. I mean, that's the difference in issues in terms of what you have to defend against, mm-hmm. is the difference in amounts. And apparently there's not any dispute about the larger amount as opposed to the smaller amount.
And I'm not sure what the defense counsel's trial strategy was at all, Your Honor. All I know is that at the time this amendment was made, it was in the middle of the trial. There were a total of 7 counts, and this was just one of them.
Thank you.
You've used your time, Mr. Kelly.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Archer, you've saved almost 2 minutes of your time.
I will be brief, Your Honors. I attempted while Mr. Kelly was up here to try to go through our file that I brought with me. I do not have the trial transcript in total to be able to review, so I cannot answer the question about the 7.2 continuing to be through. My understanding, I believe, is that it did not change. What I would like to note for the court, and the Court of Appeals noted it on page 2 of their decision, is that the original indictment did indicate that the amount was less than the bulk amount, but did specifically identify 7.2 grams. The amended indictment, according to the Court of Appeals, and I could not find my copy, was that the amount was identified as being amount greater than 5 times the bulk amount, but less than 50 times the bulk amount. So I still think that 7.2 was throughout, but I can't honestly assert that to you right now. I think that weight never changed. I think what happened was they realized that the computation changed the level based on the amount, and that's what the confusion was. The only other thing that I would note, Your Honors, other than what I've already said previously and the court has asked, is Justice Cupp, again, the substance remained a Schedule II, so the identity stayed the same. We were going down to what was the penalty. It's not the elements. It's not the identity.
Well, let me stop you there. Maybe I'm missing something here, but the first indictment says, the original indictment says, substance in an amount less than the bulk amount to it, 7.2. The amended indictment says greater than 5 times the bulk amount, but less than 50 times. Isn't that a difference in the crime charged?
Mr. Chief Justice,
city of the crime charge.
If what we determine is that the 7.2 amount is different, then yes, it does.
Is different?
It would be.
Help me through. Different what? I mean, I heard the question, but different what? Different.
Then we are talking about it. Then we are talking about a different charge at that point. If not only is it a notice issue, we're talking about a whole different weight that was proven, then there's some notice issues. But I think all the way through this has been 7.2, and that both the prosecutor and the defense counsel missed the fact that that was actually an incorrect determination on the bulk, and that's why it ended up having to be changed. The only other thing that I would note, Your Honors, very briefly is Rule 7D permits a reasonable continuance when an amendment like this happens, and this goes to the plain error issue again, is that defense counsel could have requested a continuance and the court could have granted that to give them time to address this new issue. Practicality, I don't know how well that would have worked in a multi-defendant, multi-count indictment, but that would have been possible. Your Honors, we would ask the court to reverse the Fourth District Court of Appeals and reinstate the conviction. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Archer. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.